Welcome to D-Backs Podcast.
The future.
Technology and stuff.
This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Sports, 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 sports.
From the field to the front office, the ballpark to the broadcast booth, it's time to talk D-Backs baseball.
Just think about baseball.
Here are Greg Schulte and a high drive to left. Back she goes. And Steve Berthew.
Look at Chris Owens. Go get it.
Play ball.
From warm, sunny, post-Super Bowl Scottsdale, Arizona, home of Salt River Field to Talking Stick, the crown jewel of Major League Baseball spring training sites, it's D-Backs Podcast. This is the official podcast of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and exactly 17 days from now, as we record this on Tuesday afternoon, spring training officially opens for 2015 right here where we are, men. Of course, many of the Diamondbacks players have already been here for quite some time working out, and things here are buzzing. A little extra hint, I think, of baseball in the air now that football season is over. I'm Steve Berthew, and welcome to Episode 8. Just as Bill Belichick has returned the New England Patriots to the NFL mountaintop, just as Tom Brady has returned to his rightful place among the NFL's quarterback throne, just as Douglas MacArthur eventually returned to the Philippines, our general, the Earl of Grantham, the Gubna, has also returned. Greg Schulte back from his two-week absence from the program today, his triumphant return from Hawaii. Welcome back. How was it?
It was great, but it's great to be back, and it's great to be talking baseball. We had a good time. Couldn't wait to get off the plane and get with it. Spring training, it's almost here.
Also here, where else would he be, frankly? The man who knows that when you're at the one-yard line with a timeout and Marshawn Lynch in the backfield in the Super Bowl, you run the football. Our engineer, our producer, our man about town, it's Leo Gilmartin.
It's one of those things that if I can figure out what you're supposed to do in that situation, then it's pretty gosh darn obvious.
I wonder how many people
actually put their ball off.
Fists through a TV set because he didn't get
my wife. No, I'm kidding. Although my wife is one of these 12s. You know the 12s?
Yeah.
She's from Tacoma, Washington, and is an insane, crazy Seahawk fan. And, in fact, she made I have some. I know you guys haven't had any cupcakes yet. We had in the house, she went and ordered these special Super Bowl cupcakes because we were going to go to Candy's house, Tom Candiotti, yes, to watch the game. But Candy just had the old knee replacement, so he wasn't up to it. So we're stuck with like a dozen of these gourmet cupcakes. Half of them say Seahawks and half of them say Patriots.
Patriots, those are gone.
Those are gone
because
I ate them. But she says to me as I'm leaving to do the old podcast, take these bleeping things out of here. And they have Seahawks logos on them, and they're green and blue and everything. So they're right here. If you want a Seahawks cupcake, we have the Seahawk cupcakes. That was a stunning game. It was a lot of fun. In fact, the most watched television event in U.S. history.
Ever. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Huh?
Yeah.
And it was right here.
And the beauty of sport, that just in a blink of an eye.
It was
almost
right here in our very own backyard.
And by all account, I had a lot of friends from the ESPN were in to work the game, and everything everything I read nationally was that Phoenix did a remarkable job in hosting this event. The entire valley, I should say, law enforcement, organization, activities, the setup. The weather wasn't great; had all that rain late last week, but boy, by all accounts, the valley gets an A+.
And the Super Bowl will be back.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody did a terrific job.
This city, this metropolitan area, this state. They do big events very well.
Because you had the golf and the Barrett-Jackson car thing and the Super Bowl. And you get blimps overhead and jets and the whole thing.
We know how to do
Pro Bowl
big
the week before.
Absolutely.
By the way, I never did ask you, how was the Pro Bowl? That was one of your things, right?
The Pro Bowl was good. It was fun to go to. The game itself is just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, to just play flag football.
It's a good event. And I wonder sometimes if that's what football may end up becoming because everyone's afraid to hit each other and no one's really going down and tackling. And it's like, but the event and everything surrounding it was great. It was good to be a part of. But, the game itself was, not all that exciting.
Well, the Super Bowl was real exciting. And I think we always have these discussions about national baseball rating. Local baseball ratings have never been better. especially the Diamondbacks' ratings are terrific. The fans are watching, and baseball is a very provincial sport. But we always have this discussion when you get some of these national guys who look at World Series ratings versus Super Bowl ratings, and the it's apples and oranges. And I think the Super Bowl is a great example of the way we consume the sport. I mean, that's an event. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, once a week, 3 hours, and you're done. And the greatest example of that is the Super Bowl, and the numbers were through the roof, and everybody seemed to have a good time except people from Seattle.
But it's over now, and it's baseball season.
Thank goodness. So we are ready to go. Episode 8 of D-backs podcast. We come to you from the spring training home of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Players have been here for more than a month now. Boy, I tell you what, these guys look great, don't they?
Yeah. You just saw Aaron Hill. He looks outstanding.
Aaron Hill looks like he should be doing one of those P90X things. I mean, that guy is ripped. What? He's in fantastic shape. Yep. And he told you he changed his lifting routine.
Yeah,
right?
He just kind of went back to what he used to do.
Boy, he looks terrific. And so all the guys are out here. They were out here throwing earlier, all the pitchers. We had about 10 guys throwing on the mounds. And Goldie and Cody Ross and Aaron Hill and Jordan Pacheco, a bunch of other guys were over there hitting. So they have been here, and we are ready to go. We're going to talk to two guys on this show. Josh Colemanter will join us. And anyway, wouldn't it be neat to see him get the opening day start?
Right now, he's got to be, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to start today and make out the lineup, he's your pitcher.
Yep.
And certainly a lot can change. It's going to be a very competitive camp. And we'll ask Josh about that, the idea that he might pitch on opening day. Also joining us, and I thought this was very timely, a crazy lifelong New England Patriots fan, A.J. Pollock, who was at the game, somehow got tickets. Nobody could get tickets to this thing. Nobody. It was unbelievable. But AJ, and AJ has a connection from when he played in the Cape Cod League. He'll tell us about that. He grew up in Connecticut, a big Patriots fan. So he was there. We'll talk to AJ Pollock on the show as well about the Super Bowl and about his 2015 season.
If the Seahawks had won, did we have a Seahawk backup?
You know, that's a good question. I as a Patriot fan, a lifelong guy, it never occurred to me that the Seahawks would win. So I'm not allowed to say that in the house. Boy, I tell you what, she was not happy. She was not happy. Also on the program, the Earl of Grantham has returned. So along with him, the new hit segment that is sweeping the country. Yes, on episode 8, Hey Gubna is back. And today on Hey Gubna, the story of a hitter trapped in a pitcher's body. I like that. It's it sounds like one of those mystery detective series that you got in store for us.
Very mysterious.
Also today, we climb a sabermetric mountain, coming perhaps near the end of the Sabermetric SmackDown series as we get you ready for the season. Our introductory look at baseball's new analytics. A big one today. We walk a little further out on the old sabermetric plank, and we leap into BAPIP, Leo. Today we
batting average, yeah. Balls in play.
Look at that. The Gub ready. Did you know what BAPIP stood for?
I'm not sure I could have gotten there. It might have taken me a little bit. I'm going to stay back on the plank and kind of watch you guys jump off.
We've done whip, FIP, and now we're up to BAPIP.
BAPIP.
Also, we'll see if anything's on the Twitter. And on Around the League, we'll update you on some late signings. Kind of an interesting week, actually, last week. A couple of guys showed up with new teams. Tell you who's going where, and that's where we begin the latest Diamondback news.
By the way, before you go there, yeah. I should give a shout out to Rodrigo and Aaron Boone.
They were great, weren't they? Did you listen in on?
I caught some. I didn't
the
shores
of
totally through, but I caught some bits and pieces.
All right, it's good to know that you were in our thoughts because out there on the beach.
Yeah,
Leo and I were concerned when who
did
was
you like
it?
the picture of the fish I sent you?
I like where you were doing the hang loose sign.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you were going to come back.
Yeah. We were Leo and I mentioned on the show last week that we saw there were pictures of Miley Cyrus running around.
I was
topless.
Looking for her. I didn't find her, though.
I didn't. A thorough search. Nothing turned up, huh?
Nothing turned up.
Well, a new guy is about to turn up here in camp, apparently, and this is, as of Tuesday afternoon, not been made official by the Diamondbacks. We want to point that out. Dave Stewart said not too long ago the Diamondbacks were not going to go out on the market and trade for a veteran catcher. They would go with what they have. Now, that did not preclude them from bringing into big league camp on a minor league deal something of an insurance policy and some depth. I mean, Buck Showalter would always say, you got to have your what-if guys. You know, what if somebody gets hurt? What if player X doesn't have a good spring? What if this? What if that? So you got to have your what-ifs. and you want to set yourself up for depth and have some options. And so Gerald Laird, it has been reported, will be here this spring, having agreed to a minor league deal. Now, Gerald Laird is 35 years old, turned 35 in November, played parts of 12 seasons in the big leagues. He has been the prototypical veteran backup backstop. Only twice has he ever played in more than 100 games. Only twice has he ever had more than 400 at-bats in a season. Last year, his second season with the Braves, played in only 53 games and hit .204 two seasons ago in Atlanta. Hit .281. 6 years in Texas, three in Detroit, two with the Braves. One season playing for Tony La Russa in St. Louis. And that was a good year to be there. 2011, they got a World Series ring out of the deal. Also caught on the 2012 Tiger team that went to the World Series and lost to the Giants. So, Gub, you've got Tuffy here. We've got Oscar Hernandez. Those are, as of this moment, the only two catchers currently on the 40-man roster. You've got Peter O'Brien, who's coming. But remember, Hernandez is only 21. He's a Rule 5 pick and played in A-ball last year. And so if for some reason Hernandez is not able to stay on the 25-man roster, as he must because he's a Rule 5, you've got to have some insurance, and you've got to have, you know, a what-if, and Gerald Laird seems like a good what-if.
And Hernandez was drafted with a purpose. I mean, you're not going to draft a catcher number one, I don't think, in a Rule 5 if you don't plan on keeping him, because you're going to have to offer him back, and there's a pretty good chance that Tampa Bay is probably going to take him back if offered. So,
oh, they would jump at that chance.
His chance, which I guess begs the question, with the roster that they currently have offensively, do you carry three catchers?
Maybe sometimes you do. I think it's going to be very much a revolving door myself, and you're going to figure out a way to kind of get through the year, hopefully keeping or sneaking Hernandez on the roster.
Right.
And supplementing that when you need to.
Now, I think Laird could what I'm looking at is the roster as stands right now. I don't think the Diamondbacks would break camp with three catchers.
I agree. But they may carry maybe three at different times over the course of the season if they need to.
Yeah.
But I think it's a big distinction to make, because people saw Dave Stewart and say, we're not going to go get a guy.
Right.
This is not trading something you don't want to give up to go get Deanna Navarro
or
from
Wellington
Toronto.
Castillo, which we talked about Castillo.
Exactly.
If he was going to be a Diamondback, he probably would have been part of the Montero trade in the first place, right? You would think?
I would tend to think, unless the Cubs weren't quite ready to give up on him yet as their backup.
And they hadn't signed David Ross yet.
Exactly. So later on, Castillo became more expendable,
right,
where at the time that they made the trade, he's not. But this is not going out and trading for a guy and bringing him in. This is a guy calling up a guy who was home with no job and saying, hey, why don't you come into camp and we'll see. If you get a doomsday scenario where Oscar Hernandez just is nowhere near ready and you and no one anticipates this will happen, but you have to be prepared for it. If you see Hernandez, you know what, we just can't – we hope it will work out, but there's no way he's ready. You have to have somebody to plug in there.
Which I think poses a very interesting situation. Early on, we're going to see a lot of Oscar Hernandez in spring games.
I agree.
Because, you know, they're going to have to see what they've got, number one, how he handles the pitching staff. And if he is a part of the 25-man roster, if he's going to be the backup to Tuffy, then he's got to know these pitchers too. He's got to be able to handle them. So I think Tuffy and Oscar are going to get the bulk of the play early on. And if one shows that maybe they're not grasping or whatever, then maybe you look at these other guys are going to play also, because you got split squad games.
Right.
But you're going to have to get a good, hard, honest look, especially at Oscar Hernandez.
And, of course, you've got Peter O'Brien, who's coming and has, by all accounts, been working his tail off here.
He's probably a little closer than everybody thought he was going to be.
Certainly in the national media. A lot written about the catching situation this week for some reason. And the guys writing these articles are not the guys here watching Peter O'Brien work. I just find that stunning. But, anyways, we thought it might be a good time to update or familiarize ourselves with some of the other catchers who will be here this spring. Some of the other options. You've got Blake Lolly. You've got Matt Pagnozzi. You've got Mark Thomas. Jordan Pacheco, don't forget, began last season as the Rockies' backup catcher, although he did not catch for the D-backs last year. Matt Pagnozzi is 32. Highland High School right here in Gilbert, Central Arizona. Parts of five seasons of the big leagues. Has only 105 career Major League plate appearances, Matt Pagnozzi.
Former Cardinal, though.
Yep. Played in one game with Milwaukee last season. Played for Tony La Russa, coming up in the Cardinal system. Was an eighth-round draft pick in '03. So he's around. He played last year at AAA in Nashville, the Brewers' AAA team. Hit 215 with 11 homers. He's a 219 career hitter in the minor leagues.
He's got the blood, too. I think Tom is was his uncle, correct? Tom Pagnozzi, the former big league
pitcher? I think that's the same family tree. So he's been 12 years in the minor leagues, Matt Pagnozzi. He's one option. You've also got Blake Lolly, who we saw here in the spring last year. He'll be 32 in May, so he's an older guy as well, a little bit. He's only got 39 career major league at-bats. Played 93 games at AAA Reno last year, hit 275, three home runs. Nine career minor league seasons, a 292 hitter. So Blake Lolly is here, too. There's also a guy, Mark Thomas, who we're a little less familiar with. He'll be 27 in May, has never played in the majors. Played 61 games last year for AA Mobile and hit 191. So you've got some bodies there. You've got some options, but I think that's the key word for Gerald Laird. And, again, this is as of Tuesday afternoon, still not official. But you got to have a guy who you can plug in if the Oscar Hernandez thing doesn't work out.
And I'm sure Gerald Laird is looking at this as an experience to maybe, you know, get some major league games in again. What's been already a 12-year career for him, he looks at what the Diamondbacks have there and says, I got a chance to make this, you know, ball club going out of spring training.
Yeah, and this is a guy that's sitting home. Yep. So it's not like they went out and traded a couple of young prospects to bring a guy in.
Which you didn't want him to do.
No,
especially if
not.
O'Brien is as close as they think they possibly could be.
And by all accounts, he's getting there. And you'll read a lot. I mean, I read everything every day. And I see some people writing articles about the Diamondbacks' catching situation and saying there's no way Peter O'Brien can catch
they
it.
They don't see these guys every day.
And I thought, have you seen the guy? Did you see him in the Fall League? Have you seen – you're not watching these guys play. How can you write this?
Well, they were writing on Tuffy, too. We saw Tuffy play, and every time Tuffy played, he did something, either offensively or defensively.
Now, some of the guys are scouts, and some of these guys talk to scouts who have seen them. It's not like people aren't doing their homework, or at least part of it anyway, but, you know, watch the guy play before you write these definitive articles or blog posts about the catching situation. Speaking of prospects, a lot of news about prospects last week. It was a good week to look at prospects because some of the big lists came out. And, Leo, I think we're going to have Mike Bell hopefully next week. Right?
Fingers crossed. Let's
fingers
what we're going
crossed.
To work on.
And we're going to have an extensive discussion with him about the Diamondbacks farm system and some of the prospects coming out. But a number of very good publications came out with their top 100 prospect lists last week. And we'll just kind of briefly run through them for you while it's still fresh in our minds. You can check out all these lists at the different sites. Let's start with MLB.com. MLB.com came out with their top 100 prospects list Friday, so this is only a couple of days old. And the Diamondbacks had five players in the top 100. That is the third most of any organization. They had three last year. This year they had five. Number one for MLB.com, Archie Bradley at 15. And the order and ranking, which I think is really interesting, varies I think significantly from list to list. Everybody seems to have a different opinion. But MLB.com has Archie Bradley at 15, Braden Shipley at 41, Jake Lamb at 80, Aaron Blair 81, and Touki Toussaint 98. So that's five in the top 100. And there are some people who will tell you that maybe Shipley or Blair are ahead of Archie Bradley in terms of the progression because Archie had a tough year last year, had the setback with the elbow injury. And did come back and pitch pretty well in the Fall League. But what do you think about that, Gub? Bradley, 15. Shipley, 41. Lamb, 80. Blair, 81. Touki, 98.
Well, I like the fact Tukey's at 98. You know, that shows they got a prospect a year ago. They're very excited about. The one we keep hearing about might be up before anybody else is Blair.
Yes.
His makeup and the way he's been able to push his way through there. They like him a lot. Archie last year went 3-7, and the minor leagues had a setback. And sometimes that can be good for a young so-called superstar. I'm sure Archie's going to come back fired up, you know, for the 2015 baseball season, coming to spring training with an agenda, and that is to pitch well and show that he is the top prospect in the organization and the guy that everybody should be writing about.
I think after he had the stress reaction in the elbow, it was very important to see him just be healthy in the fall.
That was important.
He was able to pick up some lost innings in the fall league. And one thing I'm curious to see this spring is the slider. This fall, he threw, for the first time in his career, started throwing a slider. So he's got another pitch now. And you mentioned Aaron Blair, who was the second of the two first-round picks in 2013. Shipley was first. Blair was second. Both guys worked their way up through the system really well and quickly last year. Aaron Blair from South Bend, then to Mobile. Pitched for the Bay Bears, finished up the season there, went 4-1, a 1.94 ERA at AA. And he is a big guy, a workhorse. The curveball has been coming along. He's got the fastball, mid-90s, the changeup, which is really good apparently, and the curveball. So that's MLB.com. Now ESPN.com, and this is kind of an event, Keith Law's top 100 list, and I worked with Keith for years and know him well. I see him at fall
league games.
I liked
his comment about the Diamondbacks. He'd probably take their top three over anybody.
I got it right here in my hot little hands. Every year, Keith Law comes out with his top 100 list, and it's kind of a big deal because Keith does his homework. He talks to scouts. He sees these guys himself, which is, for me, a big difference. But it kind of comes out in sections. The first one is where he ranked all 30 farm systems. He took the 30 teams who had the best farm system top to bottom. He ranked the Diamondbacks farm system overall as 14th best in the major league, so right in the middle. And this was the first sentence in his quick synopsis of the Diamondbacks at number 14. This is from Keith Law at ESPN.com. I might take their top four starting pitching prospects over anyone else's in baseball.
Those are the four you mentioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's Bradley, Shipley, Blair, and Tukey. He might take those four over anybody else's in baseball.
That says a lot right there.
It says a lot because, frankly, Keith has not been all that kind to the Diamondbacks
in
the past.
No, not at all.
And it's no secret he was never a big KT fan, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, and we're not going to run and hide from that on this show, certainly. But I thought that was – when I saw that, I went, whoa, that's kind of a headline. Now, on Keith's top 100 list, he only has three Diamondbacks on his list. MLB had five. Keith Law had three. But he's got Braden Shipley at 19. MLB had him at 41. Keith Law has Shipley at 19. He has Archie Bradley at 21, so he has Shipley ahead of Bradley. And he has Aaron Blair at 37. So he's got three in the top 37. And I thought that was interesting to have Shipley ahead.
So he didn't have Tukey in there and he didn't have Blam in there.
He did not have Lamb in there, and he did not have Tukey. Tukey still might be a little young for him. I mean, he's only 18 years old. But I'm looking at the Shipley page now. Here is Keith Law on Braden Shipley. Once he was unleashed by the Diamondbacks and turned out, he had a really good 12-6 curveball with power and depth to it. He's a converted position player. He's been pitching full-time for only 3 years. He started out as an infielder. Has always had a plus changeup, late downward action, easy velocity, 92-95. A little more when he needs it. And is working right now with three above-average pitches. That's Braden Shipley from Keith Law. Keith on Archie Bradley, who Keith was here. He saw Archie Bradley. In fact, I sat with Keith and watched him pitch in the fall league last fall. Here's Keith on Archie Bradley in the fall league after he came back from the elbow. Stuff was all or mostly there, 92-95, touching 97, above average curveball in the low 80s. Didn't have quite the same bite as before. The changeup is coming along as well, and he liked the slider. And then he's got Aaron Blair at 37. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And finally, Baseball Prospectus, which is a tremendous publication, came out with their top 10 prospects list in December, and I kind of have sitting here, and we'll talk to Mike Bell more about this hopefully in the next week or two. But they rank the top 10 prospects in every organization. And Baseball Prospectus has Archie Bradley number 1, Braden Shipley number 2, Aaron Blair number 3, and Tukey Toussaint number 4. There are, again, Keith Law's top 4 pitchers. He was talking about that from Baseball Prospectus.
You know, I look at that, and I look at those 4, and then you add in Yoan Lopez and Robbie Ray. That's 6 pitchers that are very young and highly touted by scouts, by organizations. So the Diamondbacks, they needed to restock this year, Bert. We talked about that, and they've done that with guys like Lopez and with Robbie Ray, and then, of course, on the major league level, Webster and De La Rosa.
And you can maybe even argue that those guys, you might still want to consider them prospects because they're so young and they have very limited major league experience.
So that's eight right there. You've got Chase Anderson has only had basically three-quarters of a season. He came up on Mother's Day.
Yep.
So that's a lot of youth that you've got right there. Helixson's not that old yet. Coleman's going to be the old man of the group, it looks like, right now. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But you've got 6 to 8 pitchers there. You're going to hit on some. There are some that they're not going to be probably what you want them to be. But when you have that multitude of talent available coming up on the major league level at some time or another, you feel pretty good about your chances of hitting at least maybe half of those guys being pretty good pitchers.
They have restocked the system.
Yes, they have, which they needed to do badly.
At the highest levels, major league level and AAA level, if you want to just call it that, guys that are close, whether they're at AA or AAA really doesn't matter. They have restocked the system with young guys, high upside, hard throwers, guys that miss bats, which Curt Schilling told us on the show you need in this division. So it's a completely different pitching outlook. And I'm going to throw another X factor at you, Trevor Cahill.
Trevor Cahill.
From what we understand, they have really worked the coaching staff here and have been all winter long on Trevor Cahill's mechanics. They are, in a sense, reworking the way he throws the baseball. So you don't know what you're going to get from Trevor Cahill. Anything at this point would be a plus. But somewhere deep in there, I really believe, Gubb, there's another 18-win season in there somewhere. And if you can get him back, maybe even not there. Maybe it's 15 wins, but that's 200 innings and a proven major league pitcher that's sitting right there.
And he's only 26 years old. Remember, he came up at a very young age.
Yep.
He's been up on the major league level. The last few years, last couple of years have not been good for him. He's got nothing to lose by trying this, you know, with the different mechanics. We'll see him, you know, as he faces hitters. If he has some success, I think it'll go a long way in proving to Trevor that, hey, I can do this again. I'm going to get back out there. That sinker's going to be good. I'm going to be effective.
And the beauty of that is you're not counting on it.
Right.
You don't – I mean, it'd be great to have, and you're probably going to need that down the road if you want to contend in this division, certainly. But right now it's not like they've got to have Trevor Cahill, Turner. It's a bonus. It's icing on the cake with all these other young guys in here. And in speaking to some of the guys out there who were supervising the throwing, the guy, and 10 guys were out there today throwing. I watched Daniel Hudson – he was up there firing BBs. He looked great. And I said, who's the guy that looked sharp to you today? And I heard Robbie Ray. People like Robbie Ray here.
There's two more names, you know, we just threw out right there.
Well, that's the guy that might get the baseball on opening day. You never know. It's Josh Colemanter. Time for our first guest.
All right, friends, it is time.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you welcome one of the magnificent figures?
He's so good.
My guest.
It's always a pleasure when our guest drops by.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions, and I want to have them answered immediately.
Oh, we're here with a guy who, Gubb, might be the man who gets the ball on opening day, Josh Colemanter. Have you thought about that at all? I probably seems a long way off now as we sit here right after the Super Bowl, but what about opening day? Is that intriguing?
Yeah, definitely. Just to go from a starter to the bullpen and then back into the rotation and then to have something like this potentially happen. It doesn't happen very often. And when I first got sent to the bullpen and then went back to the rotation, a lot of the guys were joking that it's a rare thing. Usually guys go to the bullpen and that's where their careers end.
Huh?
And yeah, you don't get to jump back on the other side of that river. So it's a unique situation that I'm in, but I'm looking forward to potentially having that opportunity, and it would be neat for me, and you know, I think opening day and all the pageantry that goes on, I don't think there's any other better day in baseball until you get to the playoffs.
You've always said the right thing, but I think you actually mean it when you say you really don't care what your position is with the Diamondbacks, be it a starter, a long man, even a short man out of the bullpen, but you were a starter in the minor leagues. I would think deep down, you still want to be a starter in baseball.
Yeah, that's not the overwhelming favorite, just because I did enjoy my time in the bullpen. But if I got to pick and they said, you know, one or the other, I would definitely pick starting. I enjoyed taking the ball every fifth day and being the guy that the team leans on to try and give them a chance to win a ball game.
I mean, nothing is certainly guaranteed, and there's been no announcement, and there's going to be a ton of competition on the entire pitching staff with all the new guys here. But it was remarkable, Josh, to watch you get put back into that role and then just seemingly get more and more consistent. And then we reached a point, Gubb, I would say probably mid-season, where it was a no-brainer that you were the guy that gave them the best chance to win, go out there every fifth day. What worked for you? Were you able to find that type of consistency being back into that role?
It just took a little while to get adjusted, but then having done it before, it was kind of easy. And the biggest thing for me was my fastball location. That's always been key for me. And I was really able to spot my fastball and use the changeup a lot. And then I think really working on the curveball this offseason, I really wanted as a third pitch out of the bullpen. Just, you never know if you're going to see teams let them roll the lineup over out of the bullpen. For me, it happens every once in a while. But I really worked on that because I wanted to have a third pitch. And it was a blessing in disguise having it going into the rotation. But I think also I've always been just to throw through it, never back down. Like, that's the only thing I knew. And talking to Harkey and Stottlemyre, and we talked about, the second half of the year, I hadn't been a starter in a while. Let's maybe take a little bit more rest in between starts. And once I started doing that, I really felt a lot more fresh and a lot more prepared going into each start. So that was part of the live and learn and adapt and adjust as things happen. And so I think that was really key as well.
Yeah, that seemed to make an enormous difference. I remember the start in Miami where he had kind of a rough time, got knocked around a bit, and then everybody said, okay, we're going to slow him down between starts. And then from that point on for the rest of the season, I think your ERA was under 1.5. It really did seem to make a big difference.
Yeah, it did. I could tell every start I was a lot more fresh. It felt like I had the life on my pitches, and anytime you get that little extra life, and I was able to locate, and things were sharper, and the curveball was better, the fastball was better, the changeup, and that really helped jumpstart that last 7 or 8 start stretch down the end of the year to close out the season.
Now, do you think you incorporate that idea or that philosophy into the entire season? I mean, there was obviously success there. Maybe there was a lesson to be learned. How does that change what you might do in 2015, if at all?
I think just understanding for me that if I do that, I'm going to be okay. I'm not, just because I cut my throwing a little bit short or tail back a little bit, I'm going to be fine. I'm not going to be missing anything once I come to my start date. So if there are those spots, and they vary season to season. Sometimes it could be in May. Sometimes it could be in June. I mean, obviously a lot of times once you get to August and September going through a full season, there's spots where your arm just doesn't bounce back as quick. And so just recognizing that and understanding that, hey, maybe I can tail it back a little bit between these couple starts, and then get back on it, the next few. But coming out of the gate, it'll be, I'm assuming, as normal as it gets.
I'm looking at your numbers from last year. 33 starts, or 33 games, 28 starts, 179 innings. Had you not had those bullpen appearances early on, you probably get to 200 innings.
Yeah, I thought about that. That's, obviously 200 is the benchmark for a starter, and going into this season, that's where I want to put myself. And I think just the more you learn and being around for a few times, you get smarter about pitching. And there's ways that you can pitch to contact and things like that that really help conserve your pitch count, and that gets you to pitch longer in games. And there's a lot of more times where I was going into the seventh or into the eighth this year than the previous year and a half or so that I was a starter. And I think just becoming more efficient and understanding how to manage a game a little bit better, and those are things you continue to learn with time and continue to get better with.
Yeah, and I think the perfect example of that was the game against the Reds where you faced the minimum there at the end of May. I think you had 5 strikeouts in that game, I want to say off the top of my head. That's a great example of just what you talked about, being smart, being economical. And usually when you see, Colemanter faces the minimum 27, you think, wow, he must have struck out 15 guys. It wasn't like that at all. You were just bang, 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 very efficient, almost methodical, it seemed, in getting guys out a couple of pitches into the at-bat.
Yeah, and that's something I've learned. I've never been a huge strikeout pitcher, but just because it's a 1-2-0-2 count doesn't mean you have to throw a pitch that they have to swing and miss that. You can just make a good pitch in a good location, and they're on their heels anyway. They're on the defensive at that point. You don't have to get them to swing at a ball that bounces or swing at a ball that's up over their numbers or something like that. You can just still make a good pitch and get them to hit a soft fly ball or a ground ball, and that works just as well, and it saves a few pitches as opposed to those guys that not necessarily do, but it seems like they chase the strikeouts or try and get strikeouts in that situation.
I don't think it's unique anymore. I mean, you're up over the top. It's been talked about throughout your minor league career, your major league career, which began in 2011. But now, I mean, I think people are starting to realize, hey, whatever the motion, they faced you enough. This guy's a pretty good pitcher. I mean, the uniqueness of that, it's unusual because you don't face a lot of over-the-top type pitchers. But at the same time, you've shown that ability to just constantly get guys out.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to prove, and that's what I had to do through the minor leagues, even at this level a little bit, was just to continue to get guys out. And I heard somebody in the organization say it when one of my first few years in the minor leagues, that if you get outs, they're going to find a place for you to pitch. If you can hit, they're going to find a place for you to play. That's just usually how it works out. And so if I could continue to prove, and it didn't matter to me if I had to prove it year in and year out, like I want to get better and move along. And yeah, now it's to the point where, you know, they've seen it and stuff, but you talk to hitters and deception is one of the biggest keys.
Sure.
And there's guys that throw 100, but they see it the whole way and it feels like 92, 93. And there's guys that throw 90, 92 that it feels like 97. And it's just the deception and hiding the ball and things like that. And so you don't have to throw overly hard to get away with stuff if you, you know how to pitch, essentially.
Was there ever a time in your minor league career where you tried to get away from that, maybe go down a little bit, or has it always been your bread and butter?
Yeah, that's always been how I've thrown. I didn't realize it until my mom got a little bit of tape of me for a high school video or something she was putting together, and I was like, oh, that seems different, because you feel
sure
what you look like in your head, and I just felt like I threw as normal as ever, as the guy next to me. And then when I got to college, my pitching coach there, Mike Villano, loved it. He loved the deception and hiding the ball, and he told me the first day, he's like, I'm going to teach you how to throw a changeup. And we worked on the changeup all through college, and it was a pitch I'd thrown less than a handful of times in high school because I didn't need it. And I never thought that, you know, sitting here today, that would have been an instrumental part of my success.
At Central Michigan, of course, I was reading about how you had this phenomenal record in high school at Homer, with all these complete games and shutouts, and the ERA was like 0.1 something, and you would think there'd be all these offers rolling in, but apparently there weren't, and those that did wanted to change the motion. Is that accurate?
Yeah, for the most part. I'd talked to local schools, Division II, Division III schools, leading up to my senior year. I went and visited a few, and I really wanted to hold out to see what would happen. I knew we were going to have a good team my senior year, and thought, yeah, maybe we get to play in some big games or something happens, and just give teams more time to find out about me. And it wasn't until, I think, the third to last game of the year, the quarterfinals, I was pitching against Blissfield, who had won a handful of the last state titles in our division, and they had a kid going to Southern Illinois, so he had been around. And so that was the first time I'd talked to a Division I school, and Michigan State and Michigan would have probably been at the top of the list just because they're in the Big Ten, a little bit more notoriety for those schools, but neither of them were that interested. Michigan, essentially because of the way I threw, and I talked to their head coach at the time after that, and he said, you know, we might have missed the boat, but at the time, you know, he liked guys that threw with some two-seam movement, sliders, stuff like that, and obviously I don't do that, and it just was a perfect storm to end up at Central Michigan. The coaching staff there was great, the campus, everything about it really suited me, and it fit well, and so, yeah, I signed in July and showed up in August.
Fastball, changeup. You've gotten more into throwing the curveball. Where do you stand right now with the curveball? How would you rate it, your curveball?
It's getting much better, and it's something I continue to work on just because I want to be able to have it as a strike pitch but also a strikeout pitch. And yeah, you can steal strikes with it here and there, but after a while teams might like, hey, now all of a sudden he's going to start throwing this for a first-pitch strike. And so I want to be able to use it in multiple ways like I use my other pitches, whether it's to throw it for a strike, mm-hmm. or throw it for effect somewhere, but then also be able to use it to get some outs.
Did you settle on a grip?
Yeah, I had never tried the spike grip that a lot of guys use. It just never felt comfortable to me, and I'd tried a bunch of different things. And last year, when we were here about this time, when we were starting to get our throwing going and throwing bullpens and leading into spring training, I was playing catch with J.J. Putz. He was my throwing partner, and he said, you know, just try it. Just do it for 2 weeks. If you don't like it, we'll try something else. But just, and it, after a while, it just got really natural. It felt great, and so kind of credit to him for forcing me to stick with that. And now it feels, you know, just as good as any curveball ever has.
Well, it sure is effective.
Yeah, and you know, you got to have the pitch. I mean, you can't. Most starters, if not all starters, we got four pitches, three whatsoever. So the curveball becomes very, very important for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime it takes, I mean, they have to guess 50-50, and I would see guys do that
right.
Where just reading swings, and it's like, all right, they're completely, you know, not even paying attention to my fastball, just looking for changeup or vice versa. But now all of a sudden you throw in the curveball, and they got to be honest to that. And just the way I throw, you know, I can get away with throwing some high fastballs, just the vantage point, the angle, and the deception. And the curveball comes out at that same plane, so I can throw curveballs and high fastballs and back those up with one another. And, you know, that just adds an extra wrinkle into what I'm able to do.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because so many pitchers seem to expand the zone east-west. But you seem to be one of the few guys that goes north-south. So that really does play into the fact that that curveball becomes an even bigger weapon for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, most of the guys, I think, knees, you know, expanding in or out or whatever, like stay at the knees. And just the way I throw, you know, if I'm down in the zone, I'm effective. But at the same time, I can also be effective up in the zone. And there's times where Miggy used to do it where he'd almost be standing up and look for pitches up there. And just the way the ball comes out of my hand, you know, pitches down here are effective because they just see the downhill plane and guys have a tough time squaring it up. But then also guys see it coming at them and they think it's going to be down a little bit more and they just can't lay off that high pitch. So I'm able to go both ways with it. And that helps me out because I'm not overwhelming with velocity. So to be able to put it in different quadrants of the strike zone and even out of the strike zone, it really helps me because then they have to swing at pitches that they don't really want to.
You mentioned Miggy. He, one of a number of former Diamondbacks now, big overhaul, especially in the pitching staff. A lot of new faces. Do you know any of your new teammates?
Yeah, there's been a handful of guys. And when I first got in here, right after the first of the year, just walked the clubhouse because I wanted to see what names, if I recognize any, whether from hearing about them in the minor leagues.
That's about it.
Or guys I had played with, because, I mean, there has been a lot of turnover. And so there's a handful of names that I recognized. And there's a handful of new guys that have been in here, and you get to know them and introduce yourself and get a feel for them. But it'll feel a little bit like the first day of school coming in here. Not only that, but with the front office as well. It was quite the overhaul this offseason. But all the guys have been around. They've been very approachable and very communicative. And so, you know, we're excited to see. You can't really change much about baseball. It's still pitching and throwing and fielding and hitting. But every manager has their emphasis. And so with Gibby, base running was huge. I remember my first spring training, we worked on holding runners and pickoffs more than anything. So I'm interested to see, you know, what Chip and Stu and La Russa and those guys have in mind for us this spring training.
Well, with all the resumes over there, I'm sure whatever they have to say, everyone will be listening attentively. I mean, it's a pretty impressive group when they all stand in a row together with their arms folded, watching guys throw off these bullpen mounds. You look over and you see just one guy after another and think, wow, there's a lot of baseball knowledge right there.
Absolutely, and that's one thing they said is they were going to broaden the scope of what the front office did. And so they've brought in a number of guys, some analytics guys and stuff, which you know, some people pay attention to, some people don't. And you know, there's obviously some use for that just in patterns or probabilities of where guys are going to hit it. And you see it especially with defensive positioning and things. And so it'll be interesting to see how all that works because I'm sure they're figuring out their chemistry up there and what they're going to rely on. And just as much as we will when we're out here trying to get used to the new faces and where everybody's going to, you know, shake up in the lineup and on the field.
It's got a nice ring to it. Josh Coleminer against Madison Bumgarner on opening day.
Lock it in.
I like it.
I like it. I mean, you know, it's funny. You're so consistent last year, and it had such a good season. And at the same time, it seems like you're able to enjoy some of the off-the-field stuff. You're always very, very cooperative and helpful with Fox Sports Arizona, doing, you know, goofy segments and Star Wars and everything else. Do you enjoy that type of stuff, too? You really do seem to relish in that role.
Yeah, I do. For one, it fits my personality. It's hard for me to, you know, to I guess I'm shameless, and I guess for lack of a better word. I don't get embarrassed easily. I can go make a fool of myself in a tasteful way like some of this stuff, and I don't mind it. I don't mind being in front of the camera, ask goofy questions, you know, put on a goofy outfit, whatever it is. I enjoy that. It's fun. And at the same time, anything that I can do takes away from some of the stuff the other guys have. And there's a lot of guys that have wives and kids and stuff. And so for them to take a couple hours to try and do something like this, I'm sure plenty of them would. But, you know, that's time that they can spend with their family and stuff. And I don't really have any obligations outside of baseball. And I like doing it. So it's kind of a perfect match.
It's that carefree bachelor lifestyle that the Gub and I fondly remember from years gone by.
Many years ago.
Well, Josh, thanks for doing this. This is another example of you being generous with your time, and we appreciate it. And we'll we'll see you here when things officially open in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah, it's coming up fast. It's nice to get that last crazy week of the Phoenix Open and the Super Bowl. And now things kind of wind down. You can establish a routine and get ready. And, yeah, we'll be out here, hopefully not too bright and early, but on the 20th, ready to go.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
And, of course, guys, we should expect to see Josh Kohlminter at the big event coming up February 22nd, the 11th Annual Subway D-backs Fan Fest, noon to 4 at Chase Field. That's a Sunday.
And it's later than usual.
Yeah.
That's on a different day.
Season. A lot of teams already had their fan fests. But I kind of like it here because we're already in spring training mode. We get spoiled here. We have an extra sort of extended spring because we can enjoy it so much. So I think it's nice to kind of save the fan fest for just two, 3 weeks before the actual season starts.
Yeah, the other team's kind of forced to have theirs a little earlier because they have to get to spring training. We've got spring training here. We're spoiled.
It's great.
Spoiled rotten.
Last year we had 25,000 fans at Chase Field. And if you've never been to a fan fest, it's really great. And I thought the great thing they did last year with fan fest was set up some of the old memorabilia areas, had a lot of dealers here. You could get old bobbleheads. You could get old signed baseballs. You could there were some old Greg Schulte bobbleheads. And
they're
some
old.
Brenly
those
ones.
Those are rare. Those are hard to find.
They are hard to find.
They don't want to give up.
They got one in the Bobblehead Museum. Miami has one, right? There, you're right there in the Bobblehead Museum. And they have all kinds of stuff out there. And it's just a great way to spend the day and get yourself ready for the 2015 season. 11th Annual Subway D-backs Fan Fest. And, again, the date is February 22, noon to 4. You'll have autograph sessions for the kids and the adults if you want. You'll get to tour the D-back clubhouse. Now, how about that?
That's huge.
I mean, a lot of people, teams have fan fests. It's at a mall someplace or, wherever they are. Right, a hotel. Yeah. We do it in the ballpark, and you can go in the clubhouse. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And you'll have photo sessions with the players. The players will be available to take some pictures. They're going to have the Arizona Diamondbacks Foundation yard sale, so all kinds of items will be up for auction there. You'll get to hit in the batting cages. You'll see the players get to ask them questions. We'll have some Q&A sessions, which we usually host up
there. Yeah, those are always fun.
On the big stages. So you can register for text alerts leading up to the event by texting FanFest to 76925. That's text FanFest, all one word, to 76925, or you can go on to dbacks.com/fanfest for all the information. D-backs Subway Fan Fest, February 22, noon to 4 at Chase Field. It's that time once again, Leo. And, frankly, the show hasn't felt the same.
We've had great shows, great guest hosts, but it's just not the same.
You got to have the meat and potatoes. It's like when you don't have the Hey Gubna. I mean, it's like having a key hitter in your lineup on the DL for 2-3 weeks.
It was like
Abbott without Costello.
Yeah, it was like Goldie was out of the lineup for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's we fill in as best we can. You hope the guy gets a hit, but, it's not like having, the big guy up there.
And it's what the fans want. It's what our listeners crave.
Once again, back from a two-week hiatus, it is the new hit segment that is sweeping the country. Here's this week's Hey Gubna.
Governor.
Now, the man who's seen it all.
Now we got the ball, and this is a bat.
The D-backs play-by-play voice since our very first game, and then some.
Now look at here.
It's this week's edition of Hey Gubna.
He was a hitter trapped inside a pitcher's body. Not exactly true, but Micah Owens indeed could hit. The Diamondbacks selected Owens in the third round of the 2005 Major League Baseball draft out of Tulane University. When drafted, it wasn't totally clear if Owens would pitch or hit. He DH'd in college and had big-time power. The Diamondbacks saw him as a pitcher, and that's how he began his pro career. He joined the D-backs in 2007, and what a rookie year it was for Owens, both on the mound and at the plate. In 27 starts for the D-backs, Micah went 8-8, with a 4.30 ERA while hurling 152 innings. But it was at the dish where Owens gained notoriety. Micah hit .333 his rookie year, covering 60 at-bats. Of his 20 hits in 2007, 12 were for extra bases, including 7 doubles, a triple, and 4 home runs. He drove in 15. When he wasn't pitching, he was still available off the bench as a pinch hitter. He was that good. He won the National League Silver Slugger Award at season's end. Never was Micah Owings better than on the night of August 18, 2007, in his home state of Georgia against the Atlanta Braves. Owings grew up less than an hour away from Atlanta in Gainesville, Georgia. The Diamondbacks were playing good baseball, and Owings was a big part of it. On this particular Saturday evening, Owings came to bat in the second inning, tied at one, with runners on at first and second. Micah doubled to left to give himself a 3-1 lead. He added to the lead with a solo home run in the fourth, drove in two more runs in the sixth with his second home run, this one to straightaway center at Turner Field, and then for good measure, singled home a run in the seventh. Owings was robbed of a fifth hit when his liner was caught at first base to end the eighth inning. Not a bad night. On the mound, he got the win to improve to 6-6 while working seven innings, allowing three hits, three runs, striking out seven. And at the plate, he went 4-for-5, two home runs, six runs batted in the Diamondbacks' 12-6 win. Owings played another year with the Diamondbacks before being dealt to Cincinnati. He returned for one season with Arizona in 2011. Like his first year, 2007, it marked another postseason appearance for the Diamondbacks. Its three-year pitching line for Arizona, 22 wins, 17 losses, over 84 games, 49 as a starter. His batting numbers with the D-backs, 298, over 131 at-bats, with 39 hits, 15 of those extra base hits, including five home runs. Another great memory in Diamondbacks history.
Who do you think is the best hitting pitcher right now? I know we got a lot of new pitchers.
Oh, boy.
So it's hard to say. But big spot, you have to have the pitcher hit, and you kind of need something more than a bunt. Who would you want up there, you think?
Maybe Zach Greinke. Well, Los Angeles Dodgers.
No, what about for us?
Oh, for the Diamondbacks?
Yeah. Greinke, you're right. He's a good hitter.
Thought you were talking in Major League. Yeah. For the Diamondbacks right now, well, Miley's gone.
Right. He hit that homer in San Francisco.
Hellickson has really had no experience in this, so maybe Brad Ziegler. I think he's 1-for-2 in his career.
I would go with Nuno myself.
Nuno?
I think El Nuno. You know, Leo, El Nuno, he can bunt. He's, I thought, by far the best bunter on the team.
He was right on the money every time we needed to get that down. So we don't really know. We didn't really know, especially early on, how he could necessarily hit because he was, like, what, the first three or four times he had a – he had a sacrifice, and he got it down.
You know, our guest a little earlier, Josh Coleman, started to handle the bat a little bit better as the season went on.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Too.
Yeah. So, interesting to see who the best hitting pitcher will
– there are no Micah Owings.
Maybe one of these young guys
right
out
now.
There. We'll see who evolves into the best hitting pitcher. I know who the center fielder is. I can tell you that. It's A.J. Pollock, and it's time for our next guest. Well, if he sounds a little winded, it's because he literally just ran in here from doing sprints where we have our podcast headquarters set up. It's A.J. Pollock, fresh off his triumphant victory, a longtime Patriots fan in Super Bowl 49. Are you celebrating? Are you flying the colors here?
Of course I am.
Nice.
Yeah. No, it's kind of sad it's over, but, you know, obviously, you know, I'm still buzzing from the game and you know, what a Super Bowl it was.
Now, in our house, because my wife is one of these 12 people, she's from Tacoma. I'm from Medfield, Massachusetts, which is right next to Foxborough. We were a house divided. Now, you, having grown up in Connecticut, I understand, longtime Patriot fan, your wife from Australia is now on board, too. So you were a little more unified, and you were one of the lucky few, because we tried like crazy, Gub. Struck out everywhere, couldn't get seats, but you scored tickets, right?
Oh, yeah.
You were at the game, and there was this great picture of you, your wife on your shoulders, wearing the Tom Brady shirt, on the field after the game that I saw on MLB.com. Tell us about your Super Bowl experience.
Yeah, well, we, you know, I have a great connection, actually, for the Patriots. You know, he was my buddy's host dad at the Cape.
Played in the Cape Cod League.
Cape Cod League, sorry about that. And, you know, I just stayed in contact with him. His whole family, I'm really close with them. So, you know, they all came in and, you know, I showed him Chase Field and, you know, he said, all right, I'll take you to the Super Bowl.
Nice work.
So, you know, I scored some tickets there and then he had to jet right after the game. And before he left, he goes, oh, yeah, well, you know, just show him your passes. You can go on the field after. And I was like, really? So there we went off and, you know, it was pretty amazing. Honestly, you know. You have a little divider there, so obviously the players are celebrating. You kind of feel like you're, you know, I'm a player myself, but I felt like I was a super fan at the time. And, you know, just a great experience. You know, my wife, Kate, obviously had the time of her life, and we're still smiling.
Your knee's a little weak, though, there at the end when
I didn't talk the whole second half.
It was unbelievable. Now, you grew up in Connecticut,
right.
And your dad had season tickets, so you would drive to Foxborough all the
right.
time, is that right?
Yeah, so my dad's whole family was in New York, so he grew up a Giants fan, but he got tickets when I was super young to a Patriots game, and, you know, I was done.
Now, is this old stadium or new stadium?
This is old Foxborough. So we went to a couple of those games, and then, you know, we put in the bid for the Super – or for not for Super Bowl. We put in a bid for season tickets when they moved to the new stadium. And, you know, we've had them ever since.
Wow. So you grew up as a Pats fan. Mm-hmm. Now, how did your wife, who's obviously from Australia, not following the Patriots, I'm guessing, now she just glommed on because of you, or?
Well, you know, she actually knew football really well. Baseball was the tough one. I was trying to explain baseball to her, but, you know, going to Notre Dame.
Oh, because she went to Notre Dame.
She went to Notre Dame, and I think if you go to Notre Dame.
You know football.
You do the football, you know, what's going on in football before you do school, so. She got the whole lowdown on the football field and brought her to a – actually, she was a Jets fan briefly because she just wanted to go against me, and Hard Knocks was on, and she thought Rex Ryan at the time was was the man. And then she came over to the good side after I brought her to the – I brought her to a Patriots game, and, you know, we went on the field, and she was just – you know, she was all in with the New England sports after that.
Now, you two haven't even been married too much yet, right?
No, we a couple months.
Got married in the off season, right?
Yeah, it's been a busy off season.
Yeah, no kidding. I guess we should probably ask you about your health. How's the hand?
Hand's great. Hands, okay. Everything's good. You know, when I haven't been floating around, I've been, you know, at the spring training facility working out with the guys. And, you know, so on one hand, it's been busy. But on the other hand, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, couple hours a day of really focusing and then, you know, getting to enjoy Arizona and the good weather here.
How important was it to you mentally to get back and end the season and play some more baseball?
Oh, it's very important. I know Goldie wanted to get back and play a couple games just for the mental side of it, just saying, you know, I'm fine. I got to hit a couple times and, you know, he 100% was okay to play, but I understand why he wasn't out there. You know, if I'm in charge of him, he's playing.
Sit down, kid.
Did you tell him that?
I didn't. You know, he's a super competitor,
yeah,
and I totally agree with him. I would have been the same thought process. I would have wanted to get out there, but you know, I was fortunate. You know, I had a setback and hit again, but I was fortunate to get back and just, you know, to feel like I finished the season playing games and you know, be able to put it behind you. So.
It's funny to think of you when you first came up and you had that year. It was 2012, right, where you were up and down four times. And there's this Pollock kid, and he can run a little bit, and he can hit a little bit, and he's got a pretty good glove and all this stuff, and we saw little glimpses. And then 2013, you saw the slow progression. And then last year, and this is what made the injury for me such a shame, was for that 30-40-game stretch before you got hit, Player of the Week twice. I mean, look, like, here's a great example.
Should have been Player of the Month.
Yeah. Here's a great example of a guy with all the tools and legit five tools, and we're watching it happen. We're watching the progression, and now he's crossing the finish line here and he's become this all-star caliber player. Did you feel like – I mean, it was impossible to get you out there for a while.
Don't say that.
I mean, did you feel – I won't jinx you, don't worry. But did you feel like did you feel like you were progressing like we had the impression you were? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. You know, it's a – you know, the outcomes are one thing. But, you know, I could tell you even when I wasn't getting those hits, I kind of felt it coming. I felt you talk to Turner Ward. You talk to, you know, Gibby at the time. You talk to all these guys and players that you've played with. And they're all trying to help. And then some stuff just keeps piecing together. It just kind of starts making more sense to you. And, you know, now every day you're showing up, you have a little more it's not more focused, but it's more, you know exactly what to look for. You know, kind of a better routine, and it's really, you know, I guess when you show up and you're a rookie, you got a million things coming at you. You got a million things at your disposal, and, you know, you really learn to condense it all. And I felt like that was kind of – I was working towards it and working towards it, and then you get into this rhythm, and it just kind of hit. And, you know, I was kind of frustrated at that point because I felt like, you know.
Oh, you were an all-star player. You were an all-star player.
Yeah, well,
you know. I mean, you don't want to say it, I get it, but you were an all-star player for us anyway.
Oh, I appreciate that, guys.
I mean, it was – I mean, this is – now you're seeing it. This is what it's supposed to – and it's one of the great things about baseball, I think, because there really is an apprenticeship. I mean, as you just said, it takes a long time to polish all the rough edges and create a major league player.
Well, and we can go back to your rookie year. You were up four or five times, and each time, first time you're up, you were like a deer in headlights.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, you know, the second time, a little bit better. Next time, even better yet. I think final time you came up, you realized, you know, I can play this game on the major league level. You'd gotten more confident. Mm-hmm. You felt easier. You knew some of the guys up here now. They were used to seeing you. And then when you get that comfort level, things just kind of ease out for a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, I see you guys coming up now that, you know, are a couple years behind me, and it's the same thing. You know, these guys could play. You know, you could name guys that we've had. We had so many guys last year, but it's important. It's important to get your feet wet up here. It's important to, you know, you get those wide eyes kind of trying to figure out, oh, my gosh, you got an upper deck now. You got a lot more fans. You know, there's media now. We didn't have that in Triple A.
You're basically afraid if you screw up, you're going right back down.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, just keep me up here for a couple of days. I like it up here.
So. Meal money's better. Flight charter.
Exactly.
Was there an area of your game that you thought you made more progress in last year than others?
Yeah, I always try. You know, yeah, I try to get better at everything. Honestly, it's. You just want to get a little bit better at one, you know, every single thing you do, and that takes a lot of focus. You know, you go and hit in the cage, you do your outfield work, you know, you're doing your studying on pitchers. It's very hard to, you know, to get better at every single thing. Or, you know, I think some people will focus on one thing and forget the other stuff. But you know, if you could just get a little bit better every single day at everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty important. But, you know, I guess if I was to – you kind of want me to narrow it down. I think just kind of knowing the zone a little better, kind of knowing when to take your chances on certain stuff and, you know, tipping your hat on some certain pitches. You know, obviously it's coming up from the minor leagues. It's very hard to just say that guy beat me. You play in college and – nobody beats you. You know, it's like, you know, it's not to say.
But now it's you're up there against Kershaw and Bumgarner.
Right, right, and these guys are going to beat you, you know. But to actually get beat and then go in and say, okay, well, it's very hard to replicate that no matter how good they are. I'm going to stick with what I'm doing, and I'm going to go out there and, you know when to make adjustments and know when to say, you know what, they have to keep repeating what they're doing in order for me to be consistently out. And, you know, and that's tough to do. You know, you can go 2 days where these guys are just making pitches on you, and you're 0 for 6, 0 for 7, and you're keep thinking, man, I got to change something. But, you know, if a pitcher's making that many good pitches, and it happens. You play 162 games, you're going to have two full games of them making really good pitches on you. And mentally it's tough. It's tough to just put that aside and come back at it the next day with the same approach.
There's wisdom in that. Isn't there? Because you realize, okay, 0 for 7, 0 for 8. You're smart enough not to panic, right, and sort of stay the course?
Yeah. You know, it's tough, and especially in the beginning of the year. Now, I had a rough first felt like 2 years, but it was only 3 games. So it was Australia, and then coming back here, probably had the worst opening day or worst game of my life, and it's 3 games. You know, if that happens in the middle of the year.
I remember there was a bunch of strikeouts.
I remember those
almost two. Every at bat.
I think I hit more with the bases loaded that game than the whole season for me, and I didn't really do anything. I think I single-handedly lost that game, but no, it's just
you made up for a few after that. Don't worry.
Yeah, but you know, it's you know, you kind of I was you know I knew they were this is the year they kind of said you know you're going to start off in center field for us, and you know I really was I think I was pressing a little bit. You know, I had a pretty good spring, and then I come out there and team's losing. And you have, you know, nothing you could say to help the team. And I'm like, okay, well, you know.
To be honest with you, you and Prado had great springs, and then both started off real slow. Remember
that?
Yeah.
I watched Prado. I thought that guy's going to win a batting title.
Sure. Yeah. I said the same thing. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, Dave McKay, and I know, Bert, you were in on the conversation. He had glowing remarks about your base running ability. Not only stealing bases, but just being smart. It pays to have a guy like McKay who's been around the game for so long. To help you maybe in different things you maybe had never thought about before.
Absolutely. You know, he was huge for me out there. Just the confidence level of, you know, looking over and knowing that this guy is, he's done his homework. He's seen a lot in baseball, and yeah, just kind of picking his brain every day. And sometimes I think it took me a little while to kind of fully, you know, this is right. Let's just go with it. You're going to get beat. Like I said, you're going to get beat a couple times on the bases, but, you know, I started catching on the stuff he does, and, you know, I kind of went over stuff in my head before the game and would talk to him, and, it was awesome. It was really a great experience for me playing a full season with Dave there. And Andy Green, I've heard sure. glowing remarks about him on the bases too. So those guys are going to be, you know, a great duo out there. And it's going to be fun. I think this year we're going to be, you know, we're going to take an even further step in base running.
Do you feel like you're never a finished product? None of us are as people, or certainly as baseball players.
Absolutely.
But do you feel like you're closer to being the total package? Like the apprenticeship is kind of over. You're going to be 27, I want to say, this year, mm-hmm. right? This age 27.
No, I'm 27
season.
Already.
Okay. So this is the time. You must feel somewhere in your head like, okay, this is it. I'm ready to make a run here and have a nice, healthy career and do the things that I'm capable of doing. It kind of feels like this is, based on what we saw last year, that we're at the starting point for AJ Pollock. We're really going to see some impressive things here.
Well, I hope I just keep getting better and better. You know, obviously, you know, I think like I said, just a little bit better at everything. And, you know, you have so many different people. We've had a bunch of different people every year. And I think what I've done better over the years is that I'm more open to try stuff. You know, you get so worried. You've had success in college. Like I said, you've had success in the minors. And then you get up here and you're so afraid to do something because you're kind of holding on to what you've done in the past. And, you know, I think I've done a better job of letting that go and saying, look, you know, let's try some things here. Let's, you know, you should always be looking to get better. I know there's guys, you know, Tom Brady's been, you know, he's 37 years old. And, you know, I'm sure that guy doesn't think he's a finished product. And I certainly don't as well. You know, I'm always, always trying to get some kind of edge. I know Goldie's out here doing the same thing. You know, all these guys that are playing at a high level, they're never feeling like they're, you know, this is it. They're right. always looking that there's something else. And you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't do perfect. So I have a lot of stuff to work on. And
well, even Brady threw two horrible picks.
Right.
I mean, those were two bad throws. No. It ended up working out all right.
Yeah, you know, every time you feel like you have it, and you know, the next day you're in for a, you know, a humbling experience. It's the game we play. And you know, I know all those mental type sport, golf and baseball, and you know, all these, you're always gonna get that you're gonna get put in check by something. So you know, you never want to feel like you have everything figured out.
We've been preaching this for a while, but don't you think that with you healthy, Goldie healthy, the guys you got coming back, Trumbull missed a ton of games last year,
right?
Offensively, Aaron Hill, we just saw him run sprints. He looks great. Terrific
Boy,
shape.
Absolutely. He's built like
yeah.
a Mack truck.
I mean, you're not going to recognize Aaron Hill. But if you stay healthy, Chris Owings, he missed half a season mm-hmm. with what looked like a minor injury at a time. You get all these guys healthy back. You've got Enciarte, who's got, you know, almost a year under his belt now. Peralta came on. Offensively, I think this ball club's going to be pretty good.
I know. We certainly think so, too. And, you know, last year we definitely underperformed. You know, we don't want to put it on all of it on the injuries. But, yeah, there was I don't think we've ever felt like we had a stretch where we really were hitting on all cylinders. You know, we had, like you said, we had Trumbo was on the shelf for a while.
They're all out at different times.
Yeah.
First
yeah.
it's Trumbo, then it's you, then it's
yep.
Goldie, and you got a bunch of other guys in between.
Sure.
It's
no,
amazing.
And then the good thing about that, yeah, we got to see NCR. They come mm-hmm. up here. We got to see Peralta. Those guys should – you know, I would assume that they would just get better and better. You know, they come here and work hard, so there's no reason to not assume that these guys are going to get better. You know, Trumbo's obviously, you know, he's a heck of a player, and you know, he's you know, he's impressive hands, impressive approach up there, and you know, we're excited to get him, you know, a full season with us, especially at Chase Field, and you know, Goldie's going to be Goldie, and yeah, I think we got some really good pieces.
I agree. When it's all healthy and if everybody can stay in the lineup at the same time and you go top to bottom, you're thinking, you know what, that's a pretty – that's a very competitive and pretty impressive offensive lineup.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
What your thoughts on the new skipper, Chip Hill?
He's been great. He's come in with a lot of energy.
Yeah, so. He's got that. Believe me, we had him here before.
He's run through the weight room a couple times, you know, barking out some stuff. Oh, yeah. So he's a lot of fun, a lot of energy, and I think the guys are pretty excited, so –
Well, we're excited to see it all come together, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun this year. Are you going to celebrate? How'd you celebrate the big win?
We celebrated it. Well, I tried to sleep. So honestly, it's been a hectic week here in Phoenix. There's been so much going on. Lots of fun, but, you know, I think it's getting good sleep right now. And coming to the ballpark, I'll celebrate that way. You know, I'd love to be out there myself with my teammates and, you know, have a championship of our own to celebrate. So.
There you go.
This is where it starts.
Got a little taste of it, didn't you? That's great. It all starts here officially in about 2 weeks. AJ, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Take me out to the ball game.
Let's see what else is happening in the majors these days.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Time to go around the league.
Around the league, here's what happened around the majors last week. Some interesting names, Gub, floating around with new teams. First of all, Ichiro is now in Miami. They already, many people think, have the best outfield left to right, and now they add Ichiro into the mix at the age of 41. He is only, 156 hits away from 3,000.
That's amazing, isn't it?
What do you think?
Will he get to it?
Yeah. I'll give you this. Ichiro, he's 41. Hit .284 with the Yankees last year. Last time he hit .300 was 2010.
Yeah, he's at that age right now. His game's starting to, you know, slide.
But I think being a fourth outfield type might be a good deal for him.
In answer to your question, do I think he'll get to 3,000 hits? That's a lot of hits for a player that age who's not going to be starting on a regular basis.
So, no.
I think it's going to be tough.
No. You don't necessarily have to get them all this year.
I don't think
either.
It's a bad pickup for the Marlins.
Because you've got Yelich, you've got Ozuna, you've got Stanton.
And those guys are going to play healthy. They're going to play anywhere from 145 to 162 games.
Yeah, there's not a lot of at-bats there, wouldn't seem like. The Giants released Marco Scudero.
But I heard a report, too, that they might try and bring him back for spring training.
Depending on how the back holds up. He's had a devastating back injury that knocked him out.
They wouldn't have won the World Series a few years ago if they had not picked him up from the Rockies.
Boy, you know, they got him from the Rockies, I think it was in August sometime. It was after the deadline.
He was unbelievable.
Or maybe right at the deadline.
Big in the World Series for him.
Yeah, he hit about 1,000, I think. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
White Sox DFA Dion Vicieta.
That surprised me. I saw that guy who had 20 home runs last year.
You know, they want to bring Gordon Beckham back, who
kind
of washed out in Anaheim. So they bring him back, and to make room, they DFA Vicieta, who's, you know, one of these young Cuban guys. He'll be 26 in March. Hit 21 homers last year, 58 RBIs. Now, he only hit .231. He doesn't get on base. He's not a good defensive player. But given where right-hand power is right now in the major leagues,
Baltimore may make a good fit for him.
Everybody's looking for it. Just going to punt on Vicieta? That seemed a little interesting, but they know what they're doing over there. They got a good ball club. Alexi Yagondo goes to the Red Sox. They also got Robbie Ross. And among some interesting names, veteran guys who trying to hook up with some new teams. John Axford, the former Brewers closer, signs a minor league deal with the Rockies.
He's played on about 500 teams here in the last 3 years.
You know, he was, in fact, I think he had a season with Milwaukee where he literally didn't blow a save. He was perfect for the season. He was as lights out as he can get. But then
his velocity went down.
And he lost his command. Mm-hmm. He started walking the ballpark, and it's been a struggle for him to throw strikes. So is that the last stop? If you're a veteran guy trying to hang on and turn it around to sign a minor league deal as a pitcher with the Colorado Rockies, that's the last stop on the bus, isn't it?
I would have to think so because, remember, he came up at an older age.
Right.
So, you know, he's had his stops now. As many teams he's played with, Colorado's taken a feeler on him, see if they can get a little lightning in the bottle and put him in the bullpen.
But that's the kind of guy it seems like the Rockies need to get. You know, those types of guys. Our old buddy Will Nieves, the former D-back catcher, a minor league contract with the Padres. Former Dodger Paul Mahalam, a minor league deal in Cincinnati. Braves signed Johnny Gomes, who won a ring in Boston a couple of years ago. And the Phillies will take a chance on Chad Billingsley. Dodgers really going to have a different look this year.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think that's a good gamble for the Phillies. You know, a little feeler on Billingsley if he can rediscover something. But it's tough when you've been out for a couple of years like that.
Yeah, boy. I mean, those shoulders and elbows, difficult. The Nationals, of course, traded Tyler Clippard. I still don't get that. They traded him to Oakland for Yunel Escobar. That was a while ago. So to make up for that spot, the bullpen, they signed Casey Jansen. Casey Jansen, you know, last four seasons in Toronto, he's been really sneaky good.
Mm-hmm.
Really sneaky good. A whip under one in three of the last four seasons for Casey Jansen.
So you think that's a feeler if their current closer is not getting the job done in Washington, he maybe slips into that role? Because who did they really have? I mean, they
well, I think Clippard was a key for him. He's a big piece of that bullpen.
I agree. He was a guy who kind of set things up. He's closed a little bit. I guess maybe they thought the money was going to get a little too high for Clippard, so they
got to start. Yeah. You know, they talked about trading Desmond maybe to the Mets.
Yeah.
That didn't work out. They're starting to think about moving some money here.
Yeah.
They're going to have to pay Zimmerman, Desmond, Denard Span's a free agent.
They got themselves into a little bit of trouble financially.
I have a funny theory about the Nationals, and this has nothing to do at all with Matt Williams, but it just seems like the harder they try to get past the Strasburg thing, the worse it gets, and they overpay for guys, and it just seems like they're going to every year look like the best team in baseball because they looked like the best team in baseball last year, and it just, for whatever reason, it just won't ever work out.
Well, you know, when Scherzer signed, there was rumors of trading Zimmerman, but there was also rumors, well, maybe it'll be Strasburg.
I'd take Zimmerman over any pitcher they got.
I like Zimmerman.
And I'm a big Doug Fister fan. I think Fister's terrific. But Jordan Zimmerman, I'd take him over any of their other guys.
He may be the one pitcher in baseball who's as good as anybody but gets really no kind of headlines.
You know, it just seems like the pieces aren't going to quite fit there.
Jason Wirth had some problems, spent a few days in jail. I mean, you know.
About that?
They got some problems there.
And Bryce Harper, you know, he's a handful.
He's Bryce Harper.
Yep, so we'll see.
Yep.
So that's around the league. It's time to get all analytical. Let's get to SmackDown, Leo.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
We're ready to smack you over the head with some serious analytics.
Thermodynamics, hypermathematics.
Like a wrestler with a folding chair.
Lay it the smack it down.
It's go time for Sabermetric SmackDown.
Sabermetric SmackDown, our boldest leap yet as we enter the wild world of BAPIP.
BAPIP.
You ready for this?
BAPIP.
Right. Does the more letters in the acronym mean, is it by importance? So the more letters,
the more
important?
Letters, the more important it is. Sometimes it just works out that way. BAPIP, batting average on balls in play. This one gets a little tricky. It's a bit abstract, but some folks will tell you that it is at its most useful when it's a predictive metric. Is a hitter or a pitcher getting really lucky and due for a drop-off, or as a struggling player merely been unlucky and ready to be bounce back and have a good season? This is BAPIP, and it's one of the more important sabermetric principles and ideas, the notion that if you factor in all the variables beyond the player's control, you can then see how those things are affecting his other numbers. And that's kind of the point here. Let's start simply now. Batting average on balls in play.
So strikeouts are out.
It measures how often a ball hit into the field of play drops in for a hit. Batting average on balls in play. Those are the key words there into play. So automatically, you don't include plate appearances that result in a home run because that's out of the field of play.
Right.
Even though it's a hit, you don't count it. You don't include plate appearances that result in a home run, a walk, a strikeout, a hit batter, or an error. Okay, so throw those out. You're just basically measuring what happens when he hits it into play. BAPIP is applied to both pitchers and to hitters, so it's a little unusual in that regard. But the idea here is, tell us how often a batter gets a hit on a ball in play, or how often a pitcher gives up a hit on a ball in play. BAPIP includes variables like defense, talent level, and just plain luck. Does one pitcher have a very good defense behind him while another pitcher has poor defenders behind him? Does one hitter smash line drives or does he just make weak contact all the time? Is a batter hitting into shifts a lot? Is he just unlucky lining a ball right to a guy? And is that fielder a Gold Glover or a weak defender? All of this is in there. And the final BABIP number, this is what makes it very useful, I think, reads about the same scale as batting average, figuring that about 30% of balls hit into play fall in for hits. So if you see a BABIP number, Leo, that's out of whack, either very high or very low, that may indicate that the player is due to either improve or have his luck turn and have things even out and come back down to earth. So you look at it like batting average.
How does that tell me, if it's low, how do I know he's going to break out and do for some, or vice versa, if he's kind of high?
I'm glad you asked that. Nice. So thanks for embracing the concept.
Just trying to help.
For the hitter, you basically, like a lot of stuff, you look at track record. If you have a hitter who, for several seasons, has, say, a 350-ish BABIP, right about 350 around there, that tells you that this is a guy who consistently hits the ball hard, makes good contact. Okay, no real secret there. What you're looking for are the big fluctuations in the BABIP numbers that tell you, you know, something's amiss here. Something's not quite right. If after three seasons of about a 300 BABIP, a guy is up there with a 380 BABIP, well, that tells you, yes, he's hot, but more likely he's really lucky and he's due to regress. They're starting to drop in for him now. And if he's suddenly way up there at 380, he's going to come back down to earth. So that tells you, we had a 380 BABIP last year. The previous three seasons, he was around 300. This year, he's probably going to be drop back from that 380, closer to what he was before.
Have you got some examples for us? Some guys?
I'm glad you asked. Let me get to you. Boy, you guys are really, I mean, I love the way you're just buying into this here. It's a big buy-in.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I wouldn't quite. It's
more like indulging. There is a caveat with a hitter BABIP. A guy who's really fast, a speedy guy, who runs well, will often have a higher BABIP from other guys because he's using that speed to beat out hits that are hit into play. So some of the majors' top 10 hitters by BABIP last year, all good runners. Jose Altuve, Adam Eaton, Yasiel Puig, Mike Trout, D. Gordon, fast guys. Now, same for the pitcher. If a pitcher has an unusually high BABIP, it might be because the defense behind him has been bad or the bloops have just been dropping in on him and he's having some bad luck. And he's really pitching better than you think or better than his record or ERA might indicate, and you should expect to see better results soon based on the BABIP. Remember now, a pitcher who pitches to contact, who puts the ball in play, you know, a ground ball type guy, often has a lower BABIP than a strikeout or a fly ball pitcher guy because that's how he gets outs. Some of the best pitching BABIP leaders last year, not big strikeout guys. Chris Young of the Mariners, Doug Fister of the Nationals, Edinson Volquez, Jorge De La Rosa, Chris Tillman, those were some of your best BABIP pitchers last year. Very good against hitters who put the ball into play. Now, BABIP is a way to try and predict where a player, a pitcher, or a hitter is headed down the road, as we mentioned. If you account for all those variables that the player can't control, the defense, the luck, the hot streaks, the slumps, you get an idea of how it's affecting the traditional numbers and the stats, and you can kind of look to see what he's going to do ahead down the road. When using BABIP, remember, it varies year to year, and it's a lot like batting average in terms of context. So league average is almost right around 300, and that's a scale that works for both pitchers and hitters. Now, let's get to the D-backs. We were just talking about the pitchers. Best BABIP in the rotation, Josh Coleman.
I was going to say Coleman.
Nice. Yeah, he was on the show. I see it all ties together, Leo. Well produced. Josh kept the ball in play, gave up a lot of weak contact, as we talked with him about. Doesn't strike out a ton of guys. Josh actually had the 14th best BABIP in the majors last year, 267. We mentioned league average was 300. So 267, 14th best in baseball. Now, was that a fluke? You know, is he going to come back down to earth? Is he going to regress? Well, no, because that was the third straight year that Cole Mentor's BABIP went down. And that makes sense. He's pitched better every year. You've got the three-season sample size there. It's consistently good. So that would suggest there's no reason to think that Josh won't continue to pitch well. You're using this, again, as a predictive stat. Offensively, another guy we mentioned who looks great out here. Great example of a guy whose BABIP indicates he's due to improve at the plate, Aaron Hill. Now remember, we look for either consistency over a 3 or 4 year span or some big fluctuation plus or minus. Aaron Hill, 2012 BABIP, 317. 2013 BABIP, 312. Last season, 276. So that's a slump. That's bad luck. Could do partly to be to injury, maybe. But the previous track record and the one-year dip there suggest that Aaron Hill is due for a bounce-back season offensively.
A bounce-back bip.
Wow. Next level. I have to say, in terms of the co-host participation, this has been our best SmackDown.
And next week, yet. You're going to look at the Humanukanukuapua. That's the Hawaiian fish, by the
look
way.
Look at you dropping the Hawaiian. So that's BAPIP, batting average on balls in play. Best place where you can find all the BAPIP stats, by the way, and browse through them if you want to look at these trends yourself, is Fangraphs.com. And BAPIP is great for fantasy. So take this concept, look for the fluctuations if you're in a fantasy league, and look at BAPIP. That's a way to look at this guy might have a good year, this guy might come back down to earth a little bit.
I like WHIP, I like OBP. I'm not real big on BAPIP.
Yeah, BAPIP is out there. It's important, but it's most useful as I think as a predictive stat. Less so as a how's he doing right now kind of a thing. All right, that's the show. Welcome back. It was good to have you back.
It was great to be back. Had a couple of great guests on here. A couple of guys I think we're expecting big years from, Josh Coleminer and AJ Pollock.
Yeah, and everybody, and they were both great examples of how everybody here is really excited. I think they're really optimistic about the way things feel out here this year.
Well, you know, there's no pressure on. I mean, the Diamondbacks, and they'll probably be picked 30th in baseball or close to it. 27
already, in fact,
through
30. I saw one thing had them at 27.
Yeah, you know, they'll be picked down there at the bottom. So. You just go out and you play the game, and you know, you stick together as a group. Leo, you've been here as long as I have. We've seen ball clubs that we didn't think were going to do anything for the Diamondbacks, and they make the postseason. 2011 was an example, even 2007.
Yeah, when the expectations are high, that definitely puts a lot of pressure on everyone across the board, and I think everyone's really confident about what they've done in this offseason and feel good about what they can do the coming year.
What really excites me is all these the competition we're going to see in the spring. If you've never been out to spring training, not even necessarily to a game, come out and watch these guys throw early on in the spring, compete against one another, because there are spots open. 1 through 5 in the starting rotation is basically open. I mean, we can pretty much pencil in Coleman, or we can pencil in Hellickson. We kind of know who the five, but you know, if somebody sticks out there having a great spring, they're going to jump into the rotation somehow, some way.
And the way that this facility is constructed, it was designed and built with fan access as its top priority. And you can stand over the bullpen six-pack of mounds on that concourse right there. You can stand and watch all six guys throw at once. It's built for you to come on out here.
And watch the catchers,
take
too.
Take a look.
Watch the catchers, too.
It's
competition.
It is. It's very impressive. And remember, you come out to the games, too. Tickets are going fast. Individual spring training tickets. First official workout 2 weeks from Friday, February 20th. That's a Friday. First spring training game, Tuesday, March 3rd, here at Salt River Fields against Leo's ASU Sun Devils. You'll want to be here. Best spring training atmosphere in the business. Our amazing March weather in Arizona. You got sunshine. You got day games. You're outside.
I mean, 80s.
Oh, just fantastic. So join us here this spring. Get your tickets online, dbacks.com. We mentioned the Subway Fan Fest coming up again the 22nd. That's a Sunday, noon to 4, Chase Field, dbacks.com/fanfest. Follow the Arizona Diamondbacks on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the whole thing. Follow this show on the Twitter at dbacks podcast. We tweet out links to the shows as well as news about upcoming guests. Back next week for episode 9.
Yeah.
And we'll be working on guests, announcements.
Tuffy's number. Matt Williams' old number. 9.
Boy, I tell you what, it's like he goes to Hawaii for 2 weeks and all of a sudden he's a machine. You are in mid-season form.
Told you I was ready for baseball.
The Earl of Grantham. Great to have Greg Schulte back with us again for the Governor and for Leo Gilmartin. I'm Steve Berthume. We'll talk to you again next week. So long, everybody.
This has been another edition of D-Backs Podcast.
The game is over. The Diamondbacks have got a win here.
Thanks for listening.
It's over. Go home.
We'll see you soon at Chase Field for more D-Backs Baseball.